Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 138 of Weed All About It, or what I'm calling Is Synthetic Biology the Playbook for Playing God? This is the second time I've interviewed Michael Neff, a professor in the Department of Crop and Soil Sciences at Washington State University. Our earlier conversation, episode 21, entitled There's Nothing Basic About It, referring to basic science, can be found on the Washington Grain Commission website at wagrains.org. Click on Summaries and navigate back into time. Neff, who is director of the graduate program in molecular plant sciences at WSU, is a cross between a troubadour and a scientist. I use the word troubadour deliberately because, you see, Neff not only lectures about the science of genetics, he sings about it too. You can find a video of Neff's ballad, 1-800-DNA, by Googling his name and WSU. A troubadour is also considered a poet, and Neff can rip off whole stanzas on the molecular intricacies of plants with an emotional intensity you can feel, even if you can't always understand. In fact, I'll be honest with you. I recorded my conversation with Neff at his Johnson Hall office on the WSU campus on May 8, 2019. But I'm only posting it now, more than 3 months later, because I'm just as intimidated by the language of molecular biology as I am talking to someone who speaks French. Which is to say, I understand in general, but don't ask me to translate. Luckily, it was only during Neff's deep science dives, deep for me anyway, that he lost me. But interspersed with the hard stuff were accessible concepts and philosophies even those of us without a PhD in botany, Neff's degree, can understand. And it's those parts that I've kept in this podcast. Even then, folks, this is an episode that you need to pay attention to. Our grandchildren may look back to this moment as we today look back to the transition from horses to tractors. I wanted to talk with Neff because of an article I read on synthetic biology, which ran with the headline, A Whole New World. The article suggested the science, which has been described as combining molecular biology and engineering to achieve specific goals, could lead to wonders as great and unimaginable as skyscrapers and silicon chips were 200 years ago. The goal of this podcast is to help listeners understand the concept behind synthetic biology, which does not begin with genes, but with proteins. Turns out, after spending a career learning about the impact of genes and genomes on wheat plants' yield, quality, and disease resistance, I'm now discovering it's the proteins in cells, which turn genes on and off, among other things, that may be more important. But when I asked Neff what proteins are and what has science learned about their importance, he made it clear that nothing is clear.
One of the things that I realize as I talk about these topics with the general public is that the title of every one of my talks should be, "It's Complicated," or "There's a lot of gray zone in there." So when we talk about the central dogma of biology, that is basically DNA is transcribed into RNA and then RNA is translated into proteins. And so that's, you know, that's basically our initial understanding about how genes, genomes, and proteins work to regulate how biological organisms grow, survive, and respond to their environment. But we realize now that it's much more complicated than that.
So that begs the question, to me anyway, which is more important, the gene or the protein?
Well, so when you think about genetics and Mendelian genetics, we would argue that the gene's the important thing. But now we realize that there's a lot of what we call non-Mendelian genetics or epigenetics where the proteins are having an impact on the genes. And so I would say that they're all equally important. And how they interact with each other is extremely complicated, which we will come to when we start talking about this notion of synthetic biology.
Okay. Now, aren't proteins made up of amino acids?
Yes.
And amino acids are the building blocks of life, right?
That's correct. So there's 20 amino acids that are used in building proteins. And each of those amino acids is coded for by three nucleotides in the DNA sequence, right?
Okay, so I know what biology is. Biology is the study of living organisms. What is synthetic biology?
Right. So synthetic biology, you will get different definitions depending on who you talk to. But basically what we think about when we're talking about synthetic biology is the assembly of new genes or new proteins, or you could take it all the way to creating new life forms by assembling entire genomes, right? So generally speaking, what synthetic biology is us dreaming up what we would want a novel protein to look like, and then using bits of protein information from different organisms to then engineer what that new protein would look like.
Until quite recently, we were dealing with the ticker tape that nature created.
Right.
I mean, you know, we looked at this ticker tape of the genome and said, okay, well, you know, maybe we can do a little bit of editing here.
Right.
But now we are actually creating new ticker tape.
We can. We've been doing that for a long time, though, actually.
But one of the arguments against GMOs was that it was playing God. But now, you know, at that time, we were dealing with organisms found in nature. Now, synthetic biology researchers are designing new organisms. Isn't writing DNA from scratch a quantum leap in terms of the God-playing department?
Yes and no. I mean, when you think about, so synthetic, you can take the extreme of creating a new organism. That's one extreme of synthetic biology, which people are trying to do, but it's not, you know, making a brand new, completely new organism is not something that is currently happening right now. I mean, it's a dream. You know, when scientists say, well, with this technology, we could do this, it doesn't mean that it's going to be easy to do, right? But so you can say, well, I can use synthetic biology to construct a gene that I've already know exists somewhere else, and now I'm just going to make it in a test tube. So it may be, you can look at that as it's a faster way for me to get that sequence into a test tube so that I can do stuff with it versus cloning it out of that other organism, okay? So that would be the other extreme, which is I'm just using already known genetic information and I'm using machines that are capable of synthesizing stretches of DNA in order to package that into a ticker tape that is more easy for me to work with in the lab. We can then also take that ticker tape information, as I described, you know, a portion of a protein from an animal, a plant, and a virus. Those are now, we're taking that information and assembling something that doesn't exist in nature. Now you can say, yeah, that's starting to sound like playing like God. There's also a good chance that sort of thing that we're trying to make that we say doesn't exist in nature could actually all be. It could exist in nature. We just haven't found it yet. So biological organisms are quite capable of moving DNA from one organism to another. I mean, this is when we make GMOs, we're using natural processes that occur in bacteria or in viruses already for inserting a pathogen's genome into another organism's genome. The playing God is a tricky gray area. It depends on the specific thing that you're choosing to do with a given technology versus the technology of synthetic biology in general, right?
So is this going to wind up being another method for Greenpeace to increase its membership? They're going to scare us with synthetic biology?
Yeah, that's possible. I mean, even nonprofit organizations still need to make money, because they're people that are employed.
But they do it by scaring us.
That is one of the approaches that has been effective. So Greenpeace has done a lot of really good work. But when they realized that they needed more money to be able to do that work, they decided that the anti-GMO approach was going to be a good way to bring in, I mean, I can't speak for them, right? I don't know why they made these decisions, but it's clear that they've taken that approach. And then ironically, you know, the science says the GMO process is not bad as a process, okay, that you could make something bad like Roundup Ready creeping bentgrass. But then science also says that global warming is real and that it's being caused by humans, and Greenpeace is more than happy to take the global warming science and say, yeah, this is something that we're concerned about, and to ignore the GMO science So it's complicated. There's more to it than just science, right? And that's one of the reasons why it's important for a lot of different people to be having these conversations. Could Greenpeace or other organizations decide that synthetic biology is something that we should be worried about or scared about? They might. You know, when we use GMOs to make better medicine, people don't have a problem with that.
Well, and that's a question that I wanted to ask you. Is synthetic biology going to be more applicable to human health than agriculture, or vice versa?
Depends on what you do with it. So basically, synthetic biology is a tool. It's the ability to either shuffle genes around or to predict how a gene variant, we're going to make a new one that we think with these sequences is going to make a protein that does this thing. It's a tool and nothing more. So you could say, is genome sequencing going to lead to the next eugenic movement? As we learn about people's genomes, can we decide who to breed with and who not to breed with? Yes. Sequencing itself, though, has many, many powerful tools to it. It's just how you're choosing to use that. So synthetic biology will be useful for human health and for medicine, but I could see how synthetic biology could also be very useful for improving a crop. We could create a new disease-resistant variant that doesn't exist, but based on computational work that we've done and based on what we understand, that if we built this protein, that it might make a plant more durably resistant to a particular pathogen. Then that's a hypothesis, and we would go and we would test that hypothesis. And if it worked and that plant actually is much better at dealing with this particular pathogen, then that would be something that would likely have a major positive impact on agriculture. If it didn't work after we do that experiment, we realize, okay, we had an idea. It was a failed idea. We have failed ideas all the time in science. In fact, I tell students, right, if you want to be a scientist, you better get used to being wrong, because most of the time we're wrong. But every time we're wrong, we learn something new. So it's hard to predict how synthetic biology or what flavor of synthetic biology is going to have an impact on what areas.
Well, are we concentrating too much in wheat breeding, for instance, on the genes and not enough on the proteins?
Okay, there are situations when we have knowledge about particular genes or groups of genes driving particular processes. And so that, when you can use that sort of, for example, we would know that there's a particular gene or gene variant that encodes for disease resistance. And so then we can focus on making sure that that particular gene is included in our breeding program, because we want to make sure that we've got resistance to this pathogen in all of our genetic material. But a lot of what breeders are doing is looking at the end product. What does the plant look like? And in most cases, many, many genes and combinations of how those genes or proteins interact with each other leads to whether or not a plant is higher yielding, whether or not it has better falling numbers. And so often what breeders are ultimately doing is when they look at the end product and they say, this is what I like, they are focusing on the protein. They're focusing on the entire biological organism. And when we bring in all this genetic diversity, now we're seeing something that we like. If it's higher yield, less lodging, higher quality grain. In most cases, there are many genes that are contributing to these factors together. We don't know which of those genes are. Sometimes we can figure that out. Sometimes we just have to say that's a combination that works.
But wouldn't it make more sense to look at the proteins and say, hey, we could turn off this protein, we could turn this one on, and therefore have this effect on the wheat plant?
Yes. So, again, when we know that an individual protein is doing a particular process, then we can take that approach. But there's a lot of unknowns in breeding as far as how all those genes are contributing. And so it's a combination of both of those things is what I'm trying to get at. So when we know this is a region or this is a target that is important for yield, for disease resistance, then we can say, yes, we're going to turn that one on or turn that one off. But the other part of breeding is how all of these genome bits of the genome interact with each other, as well as interacting with the environment. And that's the art of breeding versus the I know this is the gene that I want in there for this particular trait. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes. Okay. One of the things that has occurred about technology right now is that there are lots of technologies that are coming together at the same time. In the reading that I have done, it appears that one of the ways that you have been able to exploit synthetic biology is because you have, for instance, these computational abilities that we didn't have even 5 years ago. You have these machines that can conduct hundreds of experiments at a time. Can you tell me where we were in terms of this automation of research 10 years ago at WSU versus today?
Right. So that's a great question. And, you know, so that comes back to when I was talking about, you know, guessing how things are going to look in the future, right? So 10 years ago, I don't think anyone, well, first of all, no one knew that there would be the types of genome editing that we can do now. 10 years ago, people did not realize, or we didn't have the efficiency of sequencing whole genomes that we have now. A lot of what has changed is when I teach my class on plant molecular genetics, I talk about how chemists and engineers and computer scientists and biologists and physicists are all working together in order to be able to do something like high throughput genome sequencing, and then how to take all of that information and store it. So, and then how to take that information and actually learn from it. And so a lot of what's been happening now is based on computers, the ability of computers to run robots, to collect high throughput data, to store the high throughput data, and then for us to be able to use the supercomputing powers in order to actually make sense of those data. So that's where a lot of things have changed. And I would say that grad students now need to understand how to work with big data sets, how to interpret those, how to and then translate that into knowledge of how organisms work.
But the data sets are so big that an individual can't understand them. I mean, it takes a computer to understand them, correct?
Right. It takes a computer to be able to do the kind of comparative analysis that an individual could do, but a computer can do that in seconds versus years. Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of the fundraising goals where you see the thermometer, you know, from zero up to 100,000. Mm-hmm. Where are we in terms of understanding biology?
Well, we are in a great position of learning more and more about what we thought we knew, and now we realize we didn't. Biology is so complicated that I would say I call that job security. Okay. Mm-hmm. We have a better understanding of biology than we did before, and we are making leaps and bounds in those understanding in that knowledge or that increase in knowledge.
Are we 10% of the way there? Are we 90% of the way?
I don't know. I have no idea. All I know is that every time we learn something, we realize that there's a whole bunch more stuff that we don't know. So when I was a student, I kept thinking, you know, early on as an undergrad and as a graduate student, like, oh, all the easy science has already been done. I mean, that's not true, right? So none of it's easy. And, you know, what was a PhD, you know, back in the day, say 20 years ago, you might get a PhD for cloning a gene. Whereas now, that might just be in your materials and methods of your PhD. So every step of the way, these advances that others have done has given us the building blocks, the foundation for doing new and more complicated things. Will we ever understand it completely? I seriously doubt it. Will we be able to use the knowledge that we gain? Yes, I'm confident that we will. And I'm confident that that we will think that we understand things where we realize later on, wow, that was a very superficial understanding about how things work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Our conversation reminds me about Donald Rumsfeld, the Secretary of Defense, and he talked about at some point during the Iraq War the known unknowns and the unknown unknowns. And it seems to me that we're dealing with a lot of unknown unknowns when it comes to synthetic biology. And can we trust scientists to chart the right path? Does this research need more government oversight?
Well, you could say that we are dealing with the known, unknown unknowns in biology, whether or not it's synthetic biology or in general. That's what we were talking about at the beginning, is one thing that we're realizing is as we gain more information, we realize how much more complicated it is. So does this synthetic biology need government regulation? It depends on what you're trying to do. You know, and it's... Does genome editing need government regulation? Well, the people that developed CRISPR-Cas said, okay, we can use this for all sorts of different things, but not for human embryos. And the worry is, oh, well, we've got, you know, off-site mutations, and we're going to create mutations that are new in the environment, and they're going to be in there. But our bodies are being mutated constantly. So I think what's important is for us to not make blanket statements, pro or con, this is going to save the world, this is evil. Both of those are not good, right? To look at each thing on a case-by-case basis. So in some cases, we can use synthetic biology, as I said, just to make a gene in a test tube that's easier for me to work with, but that gene is already out there in the real world. It's just more cost-effective for me to synthesize it and work with it in the lab versus going through the process of cloning it out of that other individual. The other flip side could be, well, we could use synthetic biology to create Jurassic Park dinosaurs. Now, those are two completely different issues that would have very, very different impacts or would have different needs for regulation, right? So I think what's really important is for us to have the discussion. And to have the discussion not just be with biologists, but with, you know, civic leaders, with philosophers, with artists. I think that we all need to be having this discussion where we're looking at each of these situations on a case-by-case basis and then working through to the best of our knowledge whether or not this is a good or bad idea. Should we trust scientists to do this? What I'm saying is that scientists need to be doing this with everybody else. Right, we need to have this conversation together. Scientists are also humans. And so human nature means that there will be some people that say, I'm going to do these things that are good for society. And there's going to be other humans that will say, I'm going to do these things because they're only good for me and that's all that matters. And then there can be all sorts of different variations on that. So I think, again, to say, you know, do we trust scientists or does there need to be government oversight is essentially making blanket statements without looking at things on a case-by-case basis.
Synthetic biology. You heard it here, folks. Transformative technology that could make today's agriculture look as primitive as the horse-drawn harvests we see in photographs. I'm no Luddite. I believe in progress. But I certainly hope Neff's vision of the future of synthetic biology includes a debate that involves scientists as well as society. I hope you enjoyed episode 138, or what I entitled, Is Synthetic Biology the Playbook for Playing God? Please join me again next week for another episode of Weed All About It!
You think we're simple, you think we're not right. Look at your cities and ask yourself who's right. We've got country and you've got crime. We've got green and you've got grime. Let there be no doubt, we have what it takes to till the soil until our back aches. Just give us a break and don't be so rude. We love the work and you love the food.
We feed you.